World War II changed the face of our region, and in some cases permanently. What is now White City in Jackson County was the center of the Army's Camp White during the war, the home base of an infantry division. It was a city unto itself. Then the war ended and Camp White mostly disappeared. But what was then the Veterans Administration, still called the VA, set up a medical and rehab operation. For years it was called the Domiciliary, or for many people simply the Dom. Now it's the VA Southern Oregon Rehabilitation Center and Clinics, or SORCC. We'll explore the functions of the SORCC, or SORC, today, part of our Debt of Honor Local Focus series, looking at services for veterans. That series culminates with a TV program on Southern Oregon Public TV on November 10th. Two guests join us by phone. Chris Petrone is the Operation Enduring Freedom, Operation Iraqi Freedom Program Manager, who helps vets reintegrate. He's on the line. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much. Good morning.
And we also have Randy Teggy with us, who is the Chief of Prosthetics at the VA facility.
I did want to alert you that Randy accidentally got disconnected.
I think he's back on the line now. Randy,
I'm
back with us? You got it. Okay.
Here.
All right. You know, I waved the phone at Megan, and she got him back on the line lickety-split. So good job, Megan. So for either one of you, what makes this facility different, for example, from a veterans hospital?
Randy, would you like to field that first?
Different from a normal veterans hospital. That's kind of a unique way to phrase that, but this facility's focus is on trying to help veterans who may have lost their way a little bit. There's a lot of resident veterans here who are going through different programs to improve their lifestyle. But the big focus between what this facility does and the larger ones for my department in the prosthetics department is that we provide items that veterans need to improve their quality of life. The veteran who may need a wheelchair or may need a limb, but we don't make them here. The larger facilities have a full lab, and they can create those limbs right there on the spot, or we use local community partners to obtain those items for our veterans.
Randy, when you say that some of the guys at the facility are people who've lost their way, what do you mean?
Well, I'd let Chris take that one.
Okay.
Okay. Hey, good morning. So our facility, just to speak to your question about how our facility is different or unique from, say, a typical or standard VA hospital, we're a long-term residential rehabilitation treatment facility. We use yet another VA acronym, the RRTP. And for those who may not know, we're the largest freestanding residential treatment program in the country, and we can house up to, I believe we're now about 475 available beds to serve veterans of all types with all conditions. Basically, in terms of Randy's comments about lost their way, we kind of on the mental health or behavioral health side, there's probably three main areas of focus when it comes to the population we serve. We typically serve veterans with substance abuse issues, chronic or long-term substance abuse histories that may not have benefited from, say, a 30-day program or just to a detox. We also focus on veterans that have what we call another term, SMI, seriously mentally ill. So folks with a more chronic and persistent mental illness that require longer-term care and some closer follow-up. And then the third, which is a lot of the third kind of strain, if you will, would be then the homeless veterans. So there's a lot of veterans out there using different services, but for veterans that are homeless and struggle, say, with mental illness and substance abuse, that's probably our target. But with that, and this is where Randy and I may work on a case together, there's a lot of veterans that struggle with other medical or physical conditions that are part of this constellation of issues, and we just, you know, we try to address them in that way as well. But because we're not a hospital, as Randy was saying, is we have to rely on other facilities or other agencies to provide some of the specialty care or equipment when we're not, when we are unable to.
Chris, did the mission evolve at all when the name changed, when it stopped being the Veterans Administration Domiciliary?
Absolutely. So I guess, I can't speak to what the facility was like when we were known as the Domiciliary or the Dom, but from what I understand, it's really known as more of a housing unit or kind of like a old veterans home where there was no sense of formal treatment, or the term we use in the SOURCE acronym. There's no formal rehabilitation where there's identified goals and progress that you're working towards. So that's it, as we are trying to focus on drug and alcohol treatment, mental health treatment, obviously physical rehabilitation, and the longer-term goal, beyond just stabilizing those conditions or addressing those conditions, it's also some type of meaningful role, like employment or school or, you know, reuniting with families or whatever, you know, whatever the person's identified goal may be. So that can be, you know, lots of different things to depending upon the situation. But yes, the rehabilitation is kind of the core of what we do, and really try to, we've woven in those principles regardless of our, you know, the type of care we're providing.
We're talking about the Southern Oregon Rehabilitation Center and clinics run by the VA, the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs in White City, Oregon. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we explore further with Chris Petrone and Randy Teggy. 800-838-3760, our phone number, our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. You said 475 beds now, Chris. Is there a specific sort of set of goals for how long people will stay at the SOURCE?
That's a good question. I think it's individualized depending upon the needs of the veteran. Some veterans, you know, if I had to pick a number, because it's based on kind of the types, you know, the variety of treatment somebody accesses, but in terms of a general, time frame, I'd say 3 to 6 months might be a good window if you were to describe what we provide, and where people can access the different types of psychosocial rehabilitation that I was talking about. But, you know, some folks need longer, or unfortunately, as you may know, with any person struggling with these types of issues, relapses or setbacks occur, and they may need more time, or they may need, you know, a different type of setting, and then they can come back here. So I think one of the key pieces, though, it's important to know, and I think this probably relates more to the housing or homeless program side of it, even if somebody is doing well mentally or emotionally or even physically, they still, at some point, they're going to be asked to be self-sufficient and rely on their own, you know, their own means and faculties to return to the community. And that's where sometimes people just need more time to kind of organize themselves and come up with a good plan to, so they can, you know, they can continue that stability in the community. And we have a whole, outside of our residential program, we have a whole bevy of homeless programs that assist with that transition. And that's been a big part, not just here locally, but you may have heard nationally, Ending Homeless Initiative was started by the former Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and now it continues to be a priority with the new secretary.
What's the eligibility then? I mean, if you're trying to make use of the homeless services there, how would you figure out that you're eligible for them?
There's different conditions, you know, the idea of people who are truly homeless, they don't have a fixed address, and that could be anything from the, you know, somebody who would say, oh, I'm couch surfing, or staying in a shelter, or somebody who just doesn't, or even they're at risk of homelessness. Like, for example, they don't have the means to pay for their rent at this time, or they are, their landlord or somebody saying, sorry, you can't stay with me any longer. So it's kind of it's a bit of a spectrum for what puts people at risk of being homeless or actually homeless. Some folks, you know, have tried, I mentioned earlier, different programs, like a 30-day program or a different type of program. And when they got out, they didn't make the gains they needed to live successfully in the community and end up, you know, to have their own residence, and they end up becoming homeless for different reasons. So that's why the homelessness piece, the substance abuse piece, and the mental health piece, and like I mentioned earlier, the physical rehab are so integral and so interconnected, because each one seems to impact the other.
Again, Chris Petrone and Randy Teggy are guests from the Southern Oregon Rehabilitation Center and clinics run by the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA. Some people still call it the DOM. Some people call it Source Now. But either way, you can join our discussion on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Randy Teggy, it's not just about residential care. There's also a fairly good-sized constellation of outpatient services at Source, isn't there?
Yeah, we've got quite a large number. I'm not sure the actual number that's currently enrolled, but I'm speculating somewhere over 15,000 enrolled in our facilities. We provide quite a variety of services for those veterans, and if it's beyond our capability, we utilize a sister facility or some of our downtown partners that we work with to take care of our veterans.
Tell us a little bit about those downtown partners, because you have facilities, satellite sort of operations in Grants Pass and other places, right?
Yeah, we've got what we call a CBOC in Grants Pass and another one in Klamath Falls. It's part of our catchment area, as we call it.
And what do they do?
They're clinics just like here. They don't necessarily have as many clinical staff on board because they're smaller in nature, but they're a type of, to me and my terminology, an outreach to get closer to our veterans to provide the care they need closer to home. You know, it makes it easier. So, you know, like our veterans who live over in Klamath Falls in the wintertime, it'd be quite a bit to ask them to come over that mountain in a snowstorm to come to a doctor's appointment. And by having our clinic over there, they don't have to make that dangerous trip.
Since you are chief of prosthetics, I'm curious to know if you're getting an increase over the years in people who need prosthetic services, given the sorts of injuries that came out of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq.
We've had a slight uptick for the numbers we have, but because of our location here in Southern Oregon and the larger trauma centers, their expertise, they get more than we do because, you know, that's where the veterans kind of migrate to for the multitudes of needs and the resources that they have versus the smaller facilities like ours here. But we can provide everything. It just isn't readily available as it is if they were, and we'll say up at the Puget Sound facility, for example, where they have lots of resources. We may send a veteran there. We may send them downtown to see a specialist, but we're going to get that veteran taken care of.
And Jeff, if I could speak to that as well.
Sure, Chris.
Just to speak to that, Randy is really, Randy and his staff and the physical medicine rehabilitation staff have been really integral in, you know, providing the services here. I think what's important to know is that once, because of what Randy was saying about where we're located and our level facility, we're not a hospital or a medical center, that veterans are typically stabilized or treated with at least specifically the returning combat veterans, because that's the program, or excuse me, the veteran population that my team focuses on. They're treated at the larger polytrauma or military facilities, and by the time they come to us, they've already gone through kind of this initial, I guess, stage of stabilization treatment, and they've had many of the prosthetic type needs addressed. And then what we do is to continue that. That's when we consult on Randy and his team and the rehabilitation staff to continue their care over time, because things come up, and it's, you know, the whether it's prosthetics issues or accommodation issues in their home or vehicle adaptation. There's a whole list of challenges that exist when you're a vet, or excuse me, whole list of opportunities that exist when you're a veteran that people don't necessarily know about when they're just out of the military. And that's where Randy and his team do a really good job of that.
We had a question. Looks like he didn't stay on the line, but Jim in Grants Pass was asking about women's CERD. I mean, I imagine this is still largely a male client base, but it seems like you'd probably have a few more women over the years.
We have. I don't want to give a number that's incorrect, but I would say we're about 15% or so, give or take, in terms of our population, our women. And we do have a specific designated wing for women veterans or or unit, if you will, at the residential side. So we do have a women's, we do have women clinic providers in the medical side and the mental health side. And yes, if a female veteran of any era says, I need residential care, and they fit, you know, the profile for admission into our facility, then we have a women's unit as well.
Over time, and obviously you're going to see things that will change over time, people coming back from wars with different sets of circumstances, you're going to see more women, as we're talking about. And so particularly as relates to the general set of clientele you're working with right now, are we generally talking people from the first Gulf War onward? Is that the bulk of your clientele? Are you still seeing some Vietnam-era vets and even before?
Well, I'll let, if Randy wants to chime in, please do so. I will say I believe that the typical, our typical clientele are the Vietnam-era veterans who are typically now, you know, they're aging, they're in their, I'd say, you know, 60 years old, give or take, kind of stage of life, and that's still our predominant focus.
We provide quite a bit of services for our Vietnam-era veterans. We have a handful of the World War II veterans and some Korean War veterans as well still with us that we get to talk with periodically as we provide services for them, and it's really fun and interesting to get some of their stories. But, yeah, predominantly it's the Vietnam era. We do have some of the later Gulf War and Afghanistan veterans who need services. You were talking about, you know, what we provide for them. We might get a new amputee into our area, and we'll sit down and we'll talk with them about the programs that are available through our department in prosthetics, and talk with them about what those needs are to meet their goals and try to mitigate the disabilities that they incurred in their service to our country. And it might be, you know, the veteran might have an amputation of his lower leg, so we'll talk about different mobility devices, electric and manual. We'll talk about those prosthetic limbs, for taking a shower, for going swimming, for everyday walking, for running. All of those options are available to our veterans. And then we'll also talk about, you know, how they're going to drive their car, what we can do to help them get in and out of the vehicle if they have difficulty climbing in and out. Some veterans might need hand controls, and we'll help them with that. We'll talk with them about home modifications, you know, providing a ramp if they're wheelchair-bound to get in and out of their home. And we also talk about some of the Veterans Benefits Agency programs, special adaptive housing that's got a lot more money associated with their grants to help outfit homes to make them more handicap accessible for veterans.
Now, a source can actually help VA provide things like the home modification or the van modification, for example?
Yes, we typically work with our veterans to determine what kind of vehicle they want to have, what we need to do with our community partners to outfit the van appropriately. Some of the home modifications that we do, it's to provide essential access to those essential living areas within their home. Like we might take out a tub and put in a walk-in or roll-in shower because it's much easier to get in and out of. Put a handheld shower in and with a tub stool or shower stool so they can sit down and take a shower because standing's too difficult. Or change out their countertop so it's wheelchair accessible. They can roll up underneath the countertop and use their sink or prepare meals. There's multitudes of things we can do. I don't know about Chris, but I really think this is the best job in the world.
Huh. Lots of stuff to get you off campus for sure. We're talking to Randy Teggy and Chris Petrone from the VA Source, the Southern Oregon Rehabilitation Center and Clinics. You know, so much has been said in recent years about VA facilities and waits. Is there a wait list of any kind for services at Source, Chris?
Well, right now, we basically, because of the influx of newly enrolled veterans of all eras, you know, there's still a high demand, like I mentioned, for Vietnam-era veterans, but Gulf War and OEF, OIF veterans as well. We are in the process of, to avoid or eliminate any weight whatsoever, anything we're unable to provide here locally in a timely manner, we're using something. It's a national program called the CHOICE program, where basically veterans, if we can't provide care within a certain time, designated time frame, we give veterans the opportunity to contact a local provider and get their care access that way. So it's basically, if we can't provide it, we're going to purchase the care in the community, and the veteran would see a provider of any kind, typically, let's say, primary care. And then ultimately, once that's accomplished, then the veteran's care would then return to the VA, and then we would kind of integrate them back into their, you know, the standard services that we provide. So the CHOICE program has been the national remedy, I believe, to ensuring that wait lists, you know, any kind of wait list or delay keeps from occurring.
Let's talk about future, and in that respect, a possible future for Source. It is a smaller facility. It is not an official veterans hospital. What are some of the things that would really help your mission there that you're requesting from up the chain at the VA that might help you do your job better?
Well, if I could step back for a moment, and Randy can maybe speak to his department around that question. But I would just want to say, when you say we're a smaller facility, we have approximately 18,000 veterans, or just under that, in our catchment area in Southern Oregon. And that's the four counties in Southern Oregon, including parts of Northern California. So we cover a pretty geographically, a pretty large catchment area. In terms of what would be beneficial for us, there are discussions are how we can deal with some of the more, let's just say, psychiatrically acute or acute veterans that need stabilization from, say, withdrawal management or some other type of stabilization.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing music. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So we're getting close to the end of our time.
Okay.
Things to enhance the programs.
We're moving trying to figure out if we can make maybe other types of treatment tracks or programs within our own current facility that gives people maybe a more intensive treatment experience to get stabilization.
All right. I want to thank you both for taking the time to explain what goes on at Source, the Southern Oregon Rehabilitation Center and Clinics run by the Department of Veterans Affairs, the federal VA in White City. Chris Petrone and Randy Teggy, thank you so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you for your time, Jeff.
You bet.